Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty on a Monday, except we're bringing it to you on a Sunday. That's right. Jake Paul and Tyron Woodley just got down for 8 rounds. We're going to talk about that card, especially that fight, along with UFC on ESPN 30, which took place last night, and PFL Week 9, 2021, the playoffs. Lots to talk about, news to talk about, and man, I personally had a great weekend, so I'm going to throw some of that your way. We'll be right back to start the show. It's MMA Junkie Radio. On a Monday, wink, wink, Sunday, August 29th. Back in Tustin, California here, Goes in Vegas, but we're patching this show together because we wanted to get it to you earlier. Goes. We're just minutes removed from Jake Paul and Tyron Woodley. What did you think of the fight? What did you think of the event? I mean, it's rare that we get to discuss Sunday combat sports, but we get to do it, and it was a ton of fun.
It was a roller coaster of emotions because the event itself kind of made it fun on a Sunday, you know, and we're going to have some stuff to do pretty soon here on Sundays, but on a day where typically a fight fan is recovering from what happened Thursday, Friday, sometime, you know, Saturday, something on Sunday to top it all off, it was refreshing. The card itself was okay. The main event, I don't know how to describe that. It kind of delivered, but it kind of didn't at the same time. Like, I don't want to use that phrase I hate, but it's something along those lines. I want to say I'm shocked. But at the same time, I'm not. I really don't know what to say.
Okay. Well, did you think Woodley beat Jake Paul? Let's start with that.
Hell no. Not even close. Like, I can't even say I thought it was close. I thought it was clearly 6-2.
Okay. Which is Steve Farwood's card as well. The, the broadcaster contributor on Showtime. He kind of had the same score. I was more of the opinion that it could be 6-2, but that it could also be 4-4. Because basically, Tyron Woodley was kind of the stalker. Neither guy was really overly active. But it just looked, I think my eyes were, I guess, under the impression that Woodley was doing what none of us expected him to do, and that's take control of the center of the squared circle. He seemed to land blows that were maybe more impactful. Like, Jake Paul got a little wild at times, but he also scored more. So that's why I thought, gee, 6-2, 4-4, it could go either way. It would have been interesting if it went to the 10th round because, for sure, Jake Paul was surviving towards the end. And the biggest blow of the night definitely was Tyron Woodley. So when I heard split decision, I was like, I was kind of glad to hear it. And here were the scores, folks. It was 77-75 for Jake Paul, 77-75 for Tyron Woodley. And we had a 79-73 score. So basically, those are scores in an 8-round boxing match of 5-3 Paul, 5-3 Woodley, and 6-2 Paul. So that's how they wound up with those scores. And look, two judges had the route of Jake Paul. But I told the guys that I was watching it with, I go, I think Tyron felt a lot of confidence from that blitz that he had, like I think it was the second or third round, where he hurt Jake Paul, and then he was even getting a little bit cocky, kind of swinging his arm, you know, cocking his arm, Sugar Ray Leonard style. And I think he was maybe feeling like because he had the more impactful blows that could carry on, and if he picked up a couple rounds, he's actually going to think he's winning the fight when in reality – Jake Paul had banked the first three before Tyron Woodley did it. Now I recall it was the fourth round when that happened. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think Woodley only has himself to blame because he let him get off to a 3-0 lead, and I don't think anyone can dispute those rounds. I think maybe the third round was kind of close, but still, And at that point, once Jake had secured the fifth round, at least according to Steve Farhood, that means the best Tyron Woodley could do was fight for a draw, you know, unless he knocked him down and got a 10-8. But that part was frustrating for me because I wanted Tyron Woodley to win. And once he got past, like, the third round, I thought, uh-oh, the other guy's showing chinks in the armor. He hadn't gone that long. He hadn't, you know, he was used to basically KOing and cashing a check. And Woodley was not going away, and Woodley was not breathing hard. So I thought, okay, he's going to have to earn his money. And I thought, since Woodley got him in round four, we still had four more rounds where Woodley could really, really put him away, but he didn't. I mean, look, he had a little bit of an effort in round eight, but boxing is just different. You know, these three-minute rounds happen so fast. You can get tied up and 20 seconds go off the clock. You reset your feet so many times. You just think the offense is going to be there or the moment's going to be there, and then it's not. And then someone gets that 10 and someone gets that 9, and that's that, you know. I'm happy for Tyron that he made it that far, but to be that close and not win, that's tough. Woodley saying, let's do it. Let's fight a rematch right away. He wants to get paid, obviously. It was a big event. Kudos to both guys. But you could tell Jake Paul was kind of like, been there, done that. Let me take someone else and let me get better. I think it was a realization for Jake Paul that he's not as good as he thinks he is.
Well, maybe a little bit of that, but I also feel like if it were my job to advise Jake Paul, I would tell him, even if you do want that rematch, why not wait? It's always going to be there for you. And Tyron's only going to get older. You know, you're, what is he, 24? You know, you got time, man. You can revisit that whenever the hell you want. If I'm Jake Paul right now, I'm probably looking at somebody outside of combat sports. I think it's time maybe take a little bit of a rest and you know, spend some of that money you made, but maybe focus on whoever had the craziest tweet of the night from the world of football or basketball or something like that and say, you know what? I'm going to smoke another one of these athletes. I'm done with these MMA guys for a while.
Right.
I would do something like that, which will probably get you another win. And then from there, maybe that's when you focus on either another celebrity or, again, an MMA guy. But he was playing with fire with Tyron Woodley. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Tyron Woodley should have won that fight. I think he could have. He basically did the only game plan where he wouldn't win the fight. And that's what's happened to him in mixed martial arts. And that's not throw anything. Just stalk someone, but not really throw anything. I think in round one he threw six punches or something like that. Like, when are you going to win a round like that? You got to know that. And I think his corner was kind of serious with him. I think it was at the end of round six or something like that. He just has to know that already. Like, enough is enough. I thought the game plan was terrible. I think you're with a guy like Jake Paul, a guy that's never been in these situations that you have been. I know it's another sport, but Tyron Woodley has been to round fives of fights. To the end of his physical fitness. Jake Paul's never been something like that. He should have worked that body, dude, for the first couple rounds and then went after that head about round four. You saw how tired Jake Paul was. He would have been 100 times more tired if Tyron Woodley would have went at his body. But he didn't do that. It was just weird, man. It made no sense. It was frustrating. It's that typical frustration that you get when you watch a Tyron Woodley fight. But Jake Paul, I mean, you gotta give him his props. He shows up to the gym. This is a kid that, in most circumstances, for him to hang with Ben Askren is impressive. For him to hang with Tyron Woodley is impressive. He's getting the win, right? His brother hanging with a guy like Floyd Mayweather that's going to go down as one of the greatest boxers of all time, that's a win too. This is ridiculous that, like, for as much criticism that these MMA guys or boxing guys throw out on social media to people, they sure aren't backing it up in situations where they're supposed to be backing it up.
And that arena was full. The place was buzzing. Twitter was blowing up. I mean, we enjoyed it. Look, it wasn't high-level sweet science by any stretch of the imagination, but it was two guys that were paired up that did a good job to build up the fight. And so now you're interested in seeing somebody eat crow. That's what it basically boils down to. Someone's going to really, really have a bad night. For Jake Paul, you know, he could possibly no longer be undefeated. And I get it. He was just 3-0. But still, that was a big thing that he's undefeated. He's doing this thing. And for the MMA guy, the guy that kind of get on him. I mean, you saw John Anik tweet this morning. Bilal Muhammad, a few others, MMA people, including myself and you, we wanted Tyron to win. We wanted MMA to get its hand raised tonight, and we didn't. The Paul brothers have kind of had our number. You know what I mean? And I don't know that we'll get another chance because I think Jake said it himself. I need some time off. I got to fix my teeth, my nose, and some other things. But I think basically what he was saying was, I just got by the skin of my teeth. Let me either get better or figure out if I really want to do this because they're going to get tougher and tougher and tougher. So I do like your advice of just find somebody, an aging superstar from another sport, and pick a fight with them, but stay away from the – you know, the real strikers of combat sports. And that's maybe me being kind to Tyron Woodley because he's got a lot of power and speed, but he's basically got a 1-2. I didn't really see much of like a hook game, an uppercut game, an off-balance, you know, shot. I mean, if he's off-balance, he's not accurate. Neither is Jake Paul. But I can't lie. I was entertained. The household I was in was entertained, and that's good enough for me. I do like Tyron, you know, thinking that it's a moment for him to possibly pitch the rematch. So he went for it. And at first, Jake Paul was kind of like talk to the hand, but then he kept pushing and pushing and pushing. And Jake Paul gave him a little escape clause. He says, if you get the tattoo and honor the bet, you got it. They shook on it. Who knows how this will turn out. Think about it. If Tyron Woodley gets the tattoo, and what's it supposed to be? Jake Paul beat me or just his name?
I think it's I love Jake Paul.
Okay, if he gets it and Jake Paul says, nah, he ultimately punked him. He beat him, got him to do the tattoo, and then doesn't give him the rematch? Ooh, so Tyron's got to play that carefully. Those better be some airtight contracts, you know, if he's going to do it. And then when the second fight comes around, you know, he still has to win the fight. But this could be pretty lucrative for Tyron Woodley if he can get that second fight and win it. We'll all want to see a part three. But I was bummed. I wanted T. Wood to get his hand raised, and he didn't.
I think in the press conference, they kind of talked about that a little bit more. And I guess what Woodley said was, there's going to have to be some kind of contract that says that if I do get this tattoo, that he has to fight me. And I think the key word in what Jake was saying was permanent tattoo, right? So not like I love Jake Paul, and then a week later or after the fight changes to I love, you know, shitting on Jake Paul or something like that. Like, you can't alter the piece, whatever it is. So, but see, I thought they made this bet before the fight. Like, I thought Tyron had to get the tattoo. I thought that was the bet already. It doesn't make sense. Like, isn't he supposed to get it anyway?
I thought so. But yeah, he should insist on permanent. I didn't even know about the 1 week old, the 2 week old. Because trust me, if that didn't exist, there'd be a lot of girls walking around the beaches of Brazil with property of Big Halfie. But yeah, I found out that they actually come off after 2 weeks or so. And, you know, that's that. But I didn't even know. They have a name, too. I forget what they're called. But
are you talking about the henna tattoo?
I guess, yeah, like a henna tattoo or something like that. I mean, they really do look good for like a week or two, and then after that, a couple showers, and it's over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, look, man, if I'm Jake Paul, I'm just standing there going, like, you got your shot. Like, you couldn't have had more. What are you going to do in the rematch differently? Like, are you telling me that you had gas in the tank that you didn't let out? Because that's been your criticism your entire career. So it would be amazing to me that you didn't let that out right now, tonight. You telling me you're going to come back and you had more in the tank? Like, there's something that you didn't do tonight? Like, I don't understand that. He gave him that.
T-Wood wasn't breathing that hard. He had the gas tank to go another two rounds. So he put in the work. He had a certain strategy that was working. If he just did a little bit more of it, he probably could have snagged the round. Look, actually, on one of the judges' scorecards, it was 77-75, so that's basically a 5-3 score. If he wins one of those rounds and that judge calls it 76-76, you would have had one judge for Woodley, one judge for the draw, and one judge for Jake Paul. I think then the rematch is sellable without having to get that tattoo. You know, right. There would be no winner. But I think Jake Paul is going to realize, I got out of here by the skin of my teeth. I should just move on to the next guy, and that's it. who that might be, I don't know. He better be careful because the Diaz brothers can box, Masvidal can box. I'm sure Conor McGregor, you know, at some point when he comes back and box, he needs to kind of go that route of the lumbering wrestler, you know, somebody whose first love isn't boxing or just doesn't have the time or is as seasoned as he is with the sweet science, and then maybe he can have a go of it. But he better be very, very careful who he chooses next.
I think you got to go to the world of, like, professional wrestling, you know, and pick out one of those guys. Kind of like a not this particular guy, but like a CM Punk. Somebody that had some kind of background but has a big name within pro wrestling. Something like that. Because tell me, are you telling me that millions of WWE fans aren't going to tune in to watch that? Like, every time this guy, he's Robin Banks, dude, over and over and over. He is so smart. I have to give this kid a lot of props. I didn't like him at first. He grew on me a little bit. But I will not doubt the fact that at least he goes in there and he trains. He seems to be getting better. And he's making some pretty interesting moves.
Yeah.
You know who we should avoid, though? Anderson Silva.
For sure. Anderson Silva proved that 45, 46, whatever he is, he just does not age like other people. Now, he's not the Anderson Silva of age 32 or even age 36, for sure. But that guy can still just move. You know, he's fluid. And I think he'll be that way at least till age 50. And then maybe he'll slow down. But, man, to beat Julio Cesar Chavez at his own sport, I don't care how much that guy's party or how much of a letdown he's been. Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., I should emphasize, because that's a big difference from Julio Cesar Chavez himself. That's impressive, you know, for Anderson Silva. In the co-main event, Amanda Serrano defeated Yamileth Mercado, kind of slaughtered her. Montana Love defeated Ivan Barachik. Daniel Dubois defeated Joe Cusumano. Jesus, he would have been better off fighting Glass Joe. That guy was terrible. Tommy Fury defeated Anthony Taylor. Chris Conwell defeated Juan Carlos Rubio. That was your card tonight out in Cleveland. It's called the Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse, and it was rocking and rolling. Showtime had their proper announced team of Mauro Ranallo and Al Bernstein. An MMA guy in Ariel Helwani was there. The Barstool team was there as well, kind of doing some stuff behind the scenes. I saw Phoenix Carnivale from LFA. So it had a good merger of boxing and MMA, a good feel, good night on a Sunday to do something like this. And look, we're 17 minutes into a one-hour show, and all we've talked about is this event. We haven't even gotten to the MMA, but that's kind of how I felt was the lasting impression of what I saw this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, even at the end of the fights, there was still interesting storylines. Like in the back, Jake Paul got into it with Fury for a little bit, so that it almost turned into a fight. That's kind of setting up for what could possibly be something down the road. Mm-hmm. You know, everything that they were saying afterwards, like he took a shot at Conor McGregor, saying Conor McGregor's career is going downhill, his is going uphill, that he needs to get off of I think he called it the vodka brand or something, and get sober. So, I mean, he's just laying the foundation for future things. Now, when you bring up the Diaz brothers, you bring up Conor McGregor, you bring up Jorge Masvidal, they're under contract right now with the UFC. You know, I seriously doubt the UFC would let them box. But I actually think, it was Nate Diaz that's close to the end of his contract. I think that's a great name for him to box, because I think Nate is a good matchup for him. I think
Nate has proper boxing skills.
But he's not really quick, though. You know, he's kind of like
but he has good stamina and he can punch in volume. Mm-hmm. I think that's a bad decision for Jake Paul personally.
I think it's a good one. I would definitely
think Diaz.
I think he could. Yeah, I think he could. I think it's that style. Jorge Masvidal, no. But Nate Diaz is just gonna lumber forward, and his punches are kind of slow. I he could fight a boring fight and beat him.
I would fight Nick Diaz if Nick Diaz wasn't fighting Robbie Lawler. I'd like to be the first one to get him off a layoff. But once he fights Lawler and he's got like 6 months, 9 months of gym work, I mean, he's still going to be somewhat decent. I wouldn't fight either Diaz brother personally, nor Masvidal, nor McGregor. Jeez, who might be out there? I don't even know if I'd risk it with BJ Penn. BJ Penn's in his 40s. He's just so, you know, probably out of shape, I guess. Maybe you could catch him, but you know, at one point BJ Penn had good hands. I don't know. He's gonna have to carefully choose it. None of the names jump out at me at this moment. But again, congratulations to that whole, you know, that whole pay-per-view. I thought it was a home run for them.
I have to imagine that you want somebody that kind of is like either a former champion or somebody that's just a big name. So what I would think, and maybe, I know Dana White said no to Oscar De La Hoya, but he's got a history with Oscar De La Hoya. For GSP to fight Oscar, maybe he says yes for GSP in boxing, remember? Remember he wanted to box GSP, but Dana didn't let him. Maybe Dana lets GSP box this kid. I don't know, because it has nothing to do with Oscar. That's a big name. It's not predominantly a striker. You pin it as like one of the greatest MMA fighters of all time. Like at that point, man, if you're Jake Paul, you're going, what do you want from me? I'm fighting one of your greatest fighters of all time. Like, it'll probably sell again. This kid has.
Could that hurt Dana, though, in the sense that MMA fighters keep going out there and getting their butts kicked? At some point, doesn't want to put the stop on that? I mean, Anderson Silva, again, credit to him. He won one for us. I don't know if Vitor Belfort has what it takes to beat Oscar De La Hoya, but we need to win more of these before we lose, and would it injure the brand at all if GSP goes out there and gets mopped up by Jake Paul?
I think it's kind of already injured, but if they give the UFC some money, which I imagine would be part of that little release clause, you know how the UFC do.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's go back to the beginning of this past weekend. We last left you on a Thursday, and that the next night we had PFL Week 9, 2021. This was the last weekend run of playoffs. It's a three-week run of playoffs, and this was the last weekend where the light heavyweights and the light featherweights were in action. So the matchups were Movlev Kabulaev versus Brendan Lochning, Chris Wade versus Bubba Jenkins, Antonio Carlos Jr., also known as Shoeface, versus Emiliano Sordi, and Martin Hamlet versus Cesar Fajeda. So one by one, we get to the Hamlet-Cesar Fajeda fight. Boy, that was quick. They didn't even make it to the 22nd mark. Cesar Fajeda threw a kick and immediately realized that he was compromised in his leg, his opposite leg. To me, it looked like a hamstring pull is what got him. And when he laid there on the ground, Hamlet came in and finished him off. There was an accusation of a fixed fight. I don't think I saw that personally, but what were your thoughts on this matchup?
I mean, it's as strange as it comes, right? I guess if you tell me to do that, fix a fight, that's probably what it would look like. But I don't think a guy at this point in his career, at that level, I don't see somebody doing that. It's just unfortunate.
Yeah. Well, you know what's funny was, I was in Big Bear for a couple days, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I actually stepped over the bed in a certain awkward way because there was some stuff on the ground, and I got a hamstring pull. The same leg that I had a hamstring pull while getting a massage about 3 or 4 days before. So
you got a hamstring pull getting a massage?
Yeah, I was getting a massage, and all of a sudden I had a hamstring pull. And luckily, I got off the table quick enough to just stretch. And then the same thing with the bed. I pulled that leg straight just enough that I could stretch it. But trust me, man, it was on its way to being one of those where if I didn't do that, I would lay there in agony. And if that's what happened to Cesar Fajeda, I believe him. I think the easiest way I could set up a matchup to fix a fight would be just slug me in the belly. And I'll say you knock the wind out of me and collapse, and that'll be the end of it. You know, I don't think anyone can prove, oh, he hit him in the spleen, not the liver, or vice versa, or anything like that. I don't think I've felt anything like that from Cesar Fajeda out of the almost 20 fights that I've seen of him. So I can't join in on that chorus.
Mm-hmm. Did you mean a cramp or a hamstring pull?
I had a cramp in my hamstring.
Oh, okay.
So when it's a pull, to me, is when it knots up. and you're just laying there and there's almost nothing you can do other than just let it go by. Mine started to cramp up, but I recognized it so fast that I straightened my leg, kind of like a hurdler. You know when a hurdler's got his legs straightened and he's kind of touching his toes, kind of like that. So I was able to save it. But basically, I think, you know, it could go at any moment if I'm not careful. I need to get back to stretching, but it kind of had a week of, you know, indulging a little bit and adult beverages, hanging out, 7,000 feet altitude, just kind of hanging out a little bit. So I don't know. You know me, I drink a lot of water. All I've been drinking is water for the last 3 weeks up until this past week. So maybe I was a little dehydrated or what, but it happened in the same leg within days of each other. And it could have been ugly if I had not caught it.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah. The next matchup, so that's one light heavyweight that moves on. In the case of Martin Hamlet, Emiliano Sordi, the former champion, the 2019 champion, I guess I just gave away the result, he lost to Antonio Carlos Jr. Big win for him. It went to a decision. Antonio Carlos Jr. got all of the judges' scorecards. It was unanimous. He moves on to face Martin Hamlet for the $1 million prize in the light heavyweight division.
I don't know what's happened, but some of these former champions went from being totally chic, and I want to say totally geek, but have just kind of dropped down a level. Have you noticed? It's just like night and day. It's the strangest thing. At one moment, they're dominating, and then all of a sudden, things just aren't working out. And I don't know if that's a credit to the PFL and the people they're bringing in or what, but it's kind of a breath of fresh air. I kind of dig it.
I mean, it's kind of hard to stay on top unless you're like modern day football. You know, that's a good example of a dynasty, or maybe the Lakers in the 80s, the 49ers of the 80s. What's another one that comes to mind? Maybe Manchester United throughout the 2000s. So those are just off the top of my head. And so I think for Nathan Schulte and Lance Palmer, who you're hinting at, champ, back-to-back champs, they didn't even make it to the playoffs, and now Emiliano Sordi, he's out. But we also had Ray Cooper, who's in, and Kayla Harris is probably a favorite to defend. So it's not easy, but it can happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
We now talk about the featherweight division. Chris Wade defeated Bubba Jenkins. Mavlud Kabulayev defeated Brendan Lochnane. Wade was pretty dominant against Jenkins. Good for him, man. You know, he's kind of opened up a little bit more about his departure from the UFC, and he's kind of held a lot in, and now he's feeling like things may have just worked out for him a lot better, especially when he's fighting for $1 million. But what were your thoughts on his dominant performance over Bubba Jenkins, and then slide over to Mavlud Kabulayev defeating Brendan Lochnane via split decision? Did you agree with that call?
I thought Bubba Jenkins has looked probably as good as he's looked in a while. And it's just one of, like, you know, we talk about momentum in sports. I think mixed martial arts can carry momentum. And I felt like Bubba Jenkins had momentum. Chris Wade was doing all the right things, saying all the right things, but I just felt like the momentum was in Bubba's corner. And so that fight didn't really go the way I thought it was going to go. I thought Chris Wade did a great job. And I think he's looking pretty good going into this final. And then on the other side, I don't know what happened to Brendan's hand, but I saw after the fight, it looked like Hamburger Helper, like something may have been broken or something. I don't know when that happened, but he did just kind of look, the best way to describe it was just a little flat. You know, he just kind of looked flat in that fight. And it's not the type of fight where you feel like if they fought 10 times, he would lose all 10 times. Like, I think it would be a lot closer. This may be one of those moments that fighters say, I kind of needed something like this to happen. Maybe, I don't know. But Brendan's kind of been through a lot early on in his career, from feeling getting a win, but having it feel like a defeat on Dana White's Contender Series. I thought that was kind of like that moment, but I think he's just a little burnt out, it seems, kind of seems.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment. Kabulayev is just pretty impressive. You know, he's got his recipe. Wrestling definitely gets the job done. I thought that I wanted Lochnane to win, goes is the truth. And I think I convinced myself that maybe he may have deserved that call, but in reality, I don't think I can really argue too much against it. I think if that's what they decided and Kabulayev's gone, Kabulayev's gone. You know, there's sometimes where you're a little bit more stronger and passionate about your the case that you make for a certain fighter. I can't really come up with too strong of a case for Loughnane winning. Now, again, if they called it for Loughnane, I probably just would accept that. But I kind of had a feeling Movlid did enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can agree. I mean, it was close, but I did feel like he had a little bit of a flat performance, and I think that's why it ended up going that way.
Yeah. All right, so that's your finals there, Chris Wade against Movlid Kabulayev. All these fights take place on October 27th. It's a Wednesday in Florida, and now all the playoffs are set. So congrats on the PFL pulling off a difficult season that started off with 17-day quarantines out in New Jersey. Then the 10-day quarantines, I believe, was the next group of fights when things started softening up here with this pandemic. And now the playoffs and you know, to take a whole year off and then come back and do this, I think they can pat themselves on the back.
Definitely, yeah.
I mean, they were on big ESPN, ESPN2. They had compelling storylines. They had free agent signings that flopped but also created new stars. They had former champions that just didn't have enough to get there. So they created new stars the organic way by just, you know, by Kabulayev, again, is a good case of someone just coming through the PFL organization and succeeding. So lots for them to build on. And, of course, the budding superstar that is Kayla Harrison, who this might be her last year. You never know. PFL mm-hmm. might have to step up. But to be fair to Taylor Guardano, we'll see what happens on October 27th. They still got to fight. All right, let's move on to the UFC. UFC on ESPN 30 took place this past weekend. Giga Chikadze defeated Edson Barboza in the main event. TKO punches round three goes. Exciting fight. They went at it. I thought Barboza was controlling the fight before Giga Chikadze got him.
I thought Edson had this look like he had figured things out and it was only a matter of time and he was going to do something and finish this fight. But Giga has this confidence about him. He just keeps going forward. He keeps doing his thing. And it works. You know, he stalks you, he waits, and then he catches you with what it is he wants to do. And whether that's the kick to the liver or a nice little counter shot, he just seems to be a step ahead of his opponents. And in this fight with Edson Barboza, there were moments where both guys looked really good, but Giga just didn't seem as fazed by Edson as Edson was by Giga. And I think once Giga caught him, I mean, you know, some people were saying maybe it got stopped a little too early. I thought I understand the look of that, but I thought it was the perfect timing for that fight to be stopped. It could have been a lot worse, but that was a great victory for Giga. I thought that he looked pretty damn impressive in a division that's already fun.
He wants either Max Holloway or a shot at the title next, and I can appreciate that. In fact, he says, I'm willing to do the substitute role. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's right around the corner. We're talking about Ortega versus Volkanovski on September 25th. That's less than a month. I mean, I guess he's always in shape, but I would think that the UFC's already got contingency plans for that, so that may not be realistic. But then what he also said was, hey, I'm chasing this Max Holloway guy. Let me get down with him. What would you prefer out of Giga Chikadze? What do you think makes the most sense?
Well, if the UFC doesn't have a contingency plan for that, I think that makes a lot of sense, especially if Giga's willing to do it. And I think he's earned that position. But realistically, I would just say focus on Max Holloway and get that done a little bit staggered so that you and the winner of this main event will kind of be like on the same playing field around the same time where your names can start being mentioned together. So I would do that. Max Holloway is a hell of a fight, though. That's a tough fight. Like, I can't imagine fighting Max Holloway and there not being a prize at the end, a title. Like, you're telling me I got to get through him just so I can fight for a title? Like, that's some bullshit, dude. Max Holloway is a tough fighter. So, I don't know. If I'm him, I try and be that reserve. And if I can get in that way, great. If I can't, then yeah, Max Holloway. But Max Holloway, careful what you wish for with that kid.
Yeah, so I will say this. Max Holloway is rebooked to fight Yair Rodriguez in November. However, for him to throw that name out is not a bad thing because let's not forget, if Ortega beats Volkanovski and in any way it's a classic or controversial, the UFC will look hard at running it back. Now, I think that's not the likely scenario, okay, because Max Holloway is a big star for the UFC. I think they would want to wait and see what happens with Holloway and Yair Rodriguez, especially because Holloway has history with Ortega. Holloway Volkanovski is a tough one to promote, but we'll see. But what can happen is if Ortega and Volkanovski have a classic, and it doesn't matter what with Holloway and Yair Rodriguez do, and Holloway does, no, sorry, let me say if Holloway wins, then I could see Giga Chikadze maybe sliding in there if the UFC tells Holloway, sorry, man, the other one was a classic. You got to fight again. I think Holloway is going to want to peel off a few fights and not just hang back. So we'll see. Now, before anyone goes, George, you're crazy. Hey, they just announced Weili Zhang versus Rose Namajunas. Rose Namajunas finished her and finished her fast. Why are they running that back? You know, Weili Zhang didn't have some incredible run of the title defenses. You know what I mean? So if they're willing to do that, they're willing to do anything. They gave Jose Aldo a title shot coming off a loss to Marlon Moraes. They gave Brandon Moreno a fight versus Davison Figueiredo when that fight finished in a draw. I mean, it was a great fight, but they didn't have to do that because Figueiredo retained his title, and the reason he retained it is because he had the one-point deduction, let's not forget. I don't know. I think Giga Chikadze is in a nice spot, but that's just a deep division. I don't know if he gets a title shot, but he left openings, either to be the substitute or to fight Max Holloway, and I think that's good enough.
If you told me Zhang Weili was fighting in China in front of a sold-out crowd, maybe I could stomach it. I mean, we know it's probably going to be a fun fight, a good fight, but I don't know that it was necessary.
I agree. I'm with you right there on that one.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the co-main event. The co-main event had basically, I guess, two co-main events. Brian Battle defeated Gilbert Urbina via submission, rear naked choke in round two. Urbina actually looked good in round one, won round one. Big, big comeback for Brian Battle. And then Ricky Turcios defeated Brady Highstand via split decision. I bet on Turcios goes, and I thought they were going to give it to Highstand. So trust me, I was ecstatic when they gave it to Ricky Turcios. But I thought Highstand had done enough. What were your thoughts on those two fights?
I bet on Highstand, and I thought he had done enough. I was chilling, and I was, like, making it rain in the living room. And then all of a sudden they read that decision, and, like, I get it. It was somewhat of a close fight, but I thought it was a very I thought it was just clear that it was Highstand's fight. So yeah. I was a little bummed out at that. Huh?
You thought it was, like, a robbery? Or
No. Not a robbery. I just thought it was clear.
Got it. Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. If they match up down the road, I'd love to see it. I thought they went a little bit overboard with the comparisons to Bonner-Griffin. I don't think it was that. So I think they had too many stalling moments. Not too many, but they had too many in comparison to Bonner-Griffin. Bonner-Griffin basically teed each other up for 50 minutes. You know what I mean? That's a true slobber knocker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a little bit too overboard as well. They had their moments. I think what helped Bonner Griffin was that they were – I think what helped was it got a little sloppy, to be honest, at times. And I think that's where the common fan just kind of felt connected to that fight a little bit. This one was – like it got a little crazy, but I think it was still somewhat technical. You know, I think the fighters still kind of understood what they were doing there. So I understand. I mean,
yeah, and they had those moments where Highstand was holding onto a single, and Turcios was throwing elbows, and I mean, those are nice techniques, but there was a lot of that. Whereas Griffin and Bonner really rocked each other. I mean, just through and through and through and through. You know, like there was no tomorrow. I mean, it was a true bar fight. And yeah, you're right. There's just more of a connection. I couldn't believe they said it at least a couple times. But I mean, I guess if that's what they felt, it's left up to interpretation. So, who am I to argue?
George, you ready for some breaking news?
I am, always.
All right, here is some breaking news. This is your pubic service announcement. And the news you've all been waiting for. The Manscaped engineering team has confirmed that they have successfully created the Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, which is now available for purchase in the United States and in Canada. This new trimmer was just released only moments ago, and we are one of the first ones to get our hands on it and share the news with you. Join over 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you, 20% off and free shipping with the code MMA Junkie at Manscaped. I'm totally stoked, George. I can't wait to try 4.0.
I hear you, man. The Optimized Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer is waterproof, so you can groom in the shower and not have to worry about making a mess on the bathroom floor. I'm sure your ladies pulled you aside and said, hey, what do you got, Dr. J and a triangle choke? Come on, guys. You can't have a big old fro on your junk. You got to cut them weeds, and that way your soldier can stand out even more. And by the way, did I mention the wireless charging? The Lawnmower 4.0's new wireless charging system uses electromagnetic induction, which can help the battery last longer. If you're still trimming your face with your ball trimmer, it's time to make some changes, bitches.
Hey, lasting longer is something that I've heard could benefit you and your junk, George. So I'm super stoked for you. Listen, get 20% off and free shipping with the code MMAJunkie at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code MMAJunkie. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped.
There you have it, folks. Thank us later. Continuing on here with our UFC recap of Barbosa versus Jakotsi, also known as UFC on ESPN 30. That's right. They were on The Leader. So kudos to MMA featuring themselves a lot on ESPN and ESPN 2, courtesy of the UFC and PFL. Continuing on, after Tursios and Battle were crowned the latest Ultimate Fighter winners, which, by the way, whatever happened to Dana White? He kind of goes, here's your trophy. You're the winner. And then he steps back like he has nothing to say. It almost seems like he is just going through the motion. Boy, he mailed those two, huh? He mailed it in, and it was up to Paul Felder to come in and talk about the fights. But I remember they used to be kind of like a bigger deal. Like, you know, Ariane would sit there and present, like, I don't know if it was a medal and the trophy. And there was just a little bit more interaction between the UFC president and the winners, you know. And this time, like I say, it was just like, what am I doing here? This is my first time, everybody. Oh, I'm supposed to hand this to you.
I think maybe because it's the first time that this card isn't a card that's like completely devoted to that, the, you know, the season where you see all the fighters from that season fighting on one card. Maybe, I mean, I kind of get what you're saying. It didn't really, even like the positioning of where the fights, I don't know, it was a little odd. But that fight was pretty good. Both fights were really good. But in this particular one, man, Battle had his hands full early on. That did not look like it was going to go his way. And he gutted through it and was able to get that victory. So I kind of like both fights. It's a very strange feeling because I felt like Heinstad won his fight. I felt like he should have been the Ultimate Fighter there. And in the other one, there's an argument to say that, you know, Battle is the Ultimate Fighter, but there's still some unfinished business out there.
Yeah, because Trezeon Gore seemed to make the biggest impression in terms of, like, if you were to ask people, hey, who has the best chance of becoming a champion from the season? I think, no disrespect to Tursios, but I think some people may just tell you that Trezeon Gore guy's hard to overlook. Of course, he wasn't able to fight, and that's why we mentioned Gilbert Urbina was in the finals here against Brian Battle. But, you know, what happened, that's it. I'm sure at some point they can maybe lock up, but still, successful season. We've mentioned that many times. Congrats to both winners. D-Rod versus Kevin Lee goes. Tough loss for Kevin Lee, good friend of the show. D-Rod representing LA looked good. It was a fun fight. I loved it. But all I can think of is the tough loss that it appears to be for Kevin Lee. When Dana White says, we got to see if his future's still even here, imagine how difficult that's to hear for Kevin Lee. And not to make any excuses for Kevin Lee, I think he's an outstanding 155er, but at 170, man, I don't know if that's his future either.
Yeah, you know, the first thing you look at when you saw those two guys standing in front of each other was just how undersized Kevin Lee was, right? What he's got to do to look like a 170, or he's got to pack on some muscle. And it just seemed like even the leg kicks that he was taking from D-Rod, like, they look like they just shook his whole body every time he got hit with it. You could just tell he was outsized. And so Kevin Lee had a good first round, and he probably could have duplicated that in round two, and he had the opportunity. But that sweep, man, that's where everything changed. And I think that's where it just starts to be like the size of the other human being beating on you, man. He's just a bigger guy. You got to give D-Rod his credit. He fought a pretty good fight. You got to give John Wood and Syndicate their credit, you know, because they've been turning some fighters around. They've been doing some good things there. And that particular challenge of Kevin Lee, even though Kevin Lee is mostly known for being 155, he's still a tough out. That was a good win. For Kevin Lee, I don't know what the hell he does going forward here. Like, something has to change. And there's been times in his career where he has done that, you know, going up to Canada and working over there. And those are changes. He's done some stuff. There has to be something else there that, I mean, hell, I don't think the UFC would let him go, because it's always nice. Like, you could always find a reason to give Kevin Lee a main event on something, you know, if you give him the right matchup. So I don't know that it makes sense to really get rid of him, but maybe that is something Kevin Lee needs, you know, a new look, a new organization. I don't know. I don't know how to solve that riddle.
You know, I think about Robert Whittaker, who moved up from welterweight to middleweight and became a middleweight champion. And he's been super successful, and yet he's undersized. Why can he do it, but maybe Kevin Lee's struggling? I don't know. But two things stand out. For one, just he does seem a little outsized, outgunned. But the other one, and I would say this to Kevin, man, is there's just a drop-off I see where in a round one and half of round two, you look almost indestructible, almost unbeatable, especially when you're handling your business, especially at 155, maybe not necessarily at 170. 170 is a little bit different, but he doesn't look like a fish out of water. But then he starts to tire halfway through round two, and then round three, there's definitely a drop-off from round one. Can that be fixed, or is it genetically, is he too jacked? Does he just, is he not gifted with, you know, the type of cardio to go 15? I don't know, but I think that's definitely something that's big. And then the size. Of course, I'm always campaigning for 165 and 175 to be introduced. And then maybe that would help out those oversized 55ers who are also just outgunned by big 170 guys. You know, it's 15 pounds up there, fellas. You know, 155 to 170, 170 to 185, and then it goes to the 20-pound jump, 185 to 205. I just think that it's time. The sport's too popular. There's too many good fighters. I think 10 pounds is perfect, and I would not even want to change anything like that for the next 50 years. I think 10 pounds would work for the next 50 years until there's so many fighters that maybe we have to chop some of those in half and create 150, 160, 170, along with the 55, 65, 75. But I know that won't happen in my lifetime. But, the other leagues also use 170 and 155. It's just that they might not have as much depth, you know, as much talent, as much depth. So who knows? But if I would just say, can you make 55? And he tells me it's difficult, but I can, then I'd say that's what you got to do. I just don't see a future at 170 for Kevin Lee in the UFC.
You know, when you look at the other organizations and how they're trying to stand out from the UFC, so you take Bellator and they got the Grand Prix, right? You take PFL, they got the season and the point system. Man, what if like Ray Seffo just made a call to Scott Coker and they sat down and said, why don't we do this 165 thing? Like, do you think that would put pressure on the UFC to really want to make, because it feels like it's a change that's just inevitable. Like, it's going to happen, it feels like. So why not just do it now?
I agree, man. It's a thought. It's not a crazy thought. And someone's got to try it. You know, remember when Elite XC kind of created 160 just for Nick Diaz? Mm-hmm. And he fought, I think, KJ Nunes or someone. I think he may have done it once or twice, and then he realized, okay, I can't do this. But they fudged and they tried. They worked around their talent. Now, the UFC is going to say, well, no, we don't do that. We're the talent. We're the UFC. They got to adapt to us. But again, if you're making the 145-pound division in women's function with just like five or six fighters, and if at one point you almost got rid of 125, then it's not like you're afraid to experiment, you know? And give it a shot. I mean, it wouldn't take you and I that long if they gave us their chart of who's under contract and who's what to basically come up with 30 fighters that would belong at 65 and another 30 at 75 and then the rest go to 85 or 55 and that's it. And they would still have four stacked divisions. I don't understand their fear that they may not have enough bodies when, again, women's 45 is functioning with five and men's 125 is probably functioning with maybe 20 or 25. So they would be deeper in both of them. I don't know why they don't want to do it. It's an extra belt. You know, they always love – they love title fights. So get it done, folks. That's all I can say. Yeah. Let me give you the rest of the results here. Andre Pertoski defeated Michael Gilmore. Gerald Meerschaert defeated Mahmoud Muradov. Big, big upset there. I think Muradov was almost a minus 600 favorite. Abdul Razak Al-Hassan just punted Alessio De Chirico's head 17 seconds into that fight. Wellington Turman defeated Sam Alvey. Dustin Jacoby defeated Darren Stewart. Nice finish there. JJ Aldrich defeated Vanessa Demopoulos. Pat Sabatini defeated Jamal Emmers. Nice submission there. Heel hook. Emmers is not hurt as seriously looked. Manny Martinez defeated Guido Canetti. The bonuses went to Giga Chikadze, Gerald Meerschaert, Abdul Razak Al-Hassan, and Pat Sabatini. He did say, he being Dana White, the UFC president, that he was going to separate some money for Ricky Turcios and Brady Hystand, who he believed should have got fight of the night. He says, it may not be 50, but trust me, they'll be happy.
That's good. I love to hear that every now and again.
Me too. Incredible. That kick, it's going to be for strike of the year or net knockout of the year or head kick of the year, whatever you want to call it. But what Abdul Razak Al-Hassan did to Alessio De Chirico goes, that was a violent KO.
It's just that noise that it made, dude. Oh, my God. This is such a scary sport. And, you know, we're all very thankful that nobody has been seriously hurt, because there's just absolute violence going on week to week in that sport. It's amazing.
Did you hear when Brendan Fitzgerald, when they showed the replay a couple times, and then he goes one more time with the volume? And I don't know if you heard it. It was like the third or fourth replay. And then they did it, and you just heard crack. I was like, oh, man, that's horrible.
Yeah, it's nasty, man.
That really did sound like what it would sound like if you took a baseball bat to someone's head, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was like a crack, like a thud, like somebody hit a home run or something.
Yeah. I don't want to pile on De Chirico, but that's definitely not – a time where even the fighter that lost should get mic time. Remember, he was really big on that. Why do you only focus on fighters? Why do you only, you know, well, that loss is probably a difficult one. I don't think he would want to talk to anyone.
Sure.
You know, it just wasn't the time. Look, aside from that, folks, it was a great weekend of sports action. Manchester United got themselves a nice W today. They also signed Cristiano Ronaldo. And I'll tell you how I can tie it into MMA. UFC heavyweight Walt Harris said, I'm done with my other team. I am a Man United fan. He was texting us. He was stoked. This thing reverberated around the world on Friday morning.
Yeah, we got another signing too. Farah Hanoun. She doesn't have an EPL team. So she said that'll just be my EPL team. So we got her.
Yeah, that was huge. And then my godson, Logan, three TDs.
That was nice. Friday,
he got out there. He did his thing. And then, of course, the modern-day Monarchs defeated the – I forget what their names were. I think they're the Duncanville Raiders or something like that. They're out of Fort Worth, Dallas area. And, you know, the reason I'm making a big deal out of this is because I always have to hear, oh, there's nothing like Texas football. There's nothing like Texas football, Friday Night Lights. Look, I'm sure there is. I'm sure you all have some really nice stadiums, and I'm sure you all really, really take it serious. And I'm sure some of your teams are good. There's no doubt about that. But y'all got smoked. 45-3, Modern Day went in there and beat one of the best teams in Texas. Because Texas teams don't travel. They talk, but they don't travel. So a California team had to go in there and smack y'all around. So hopefully that shuts up that argument for a while. St. John Bosco sent a Florida team packing the other day, and now Modern Day handled their business. I was excited as could be goes, even though I was watching my godson do his thing. I had the phone on. I was like a kangaroo on Red Bull. That's how excited I was. I loved it. I loved Friday.
Yeah. So that, I guess that ties into your big hit parlay, I guess, of the weekend. You said it was a really good week.
I needed Woodley would have made it perfect if I was going to tie in the gambling aspect with the personal side. Mm-hmm. And San Francisco 49ers won today pretty big, so they look good going into the season. And Manchester United won this morning. So I'm this is one of my better sports weekends in a long time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm capping it off with a Big Ralph special right now. You know, I've been drinking water for like 3 weeks. And this week I kind of took it off and had like mocha frappuccinos, Big Ralph specials, Dr. Peppers. I probably gained back 5 pounds of the 10 pounds I lost. But starting tomorrow, skinny jeans back.
Nice. You've been doing a pretty good job.
Thank you. All right, folks, we're going to wrap up a little early. We always go long for you guys, but I think it's time for us to duck out a few minutes early. Thank you so much for your support. As always, you can follow me on social media. I'm at MMA Junkie George. Goes is at the Goes, and the radio show is at MMA Junkie Radio. We're going to load up on a lot of interviews this week, so be prepared for those, and be on the lookout for those over at our YouTube page, youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video. That's where you can see the extended interviews that Goes and I do for the website. Oftentimes, you'll see the video highlights accompany a recap, but if you watch the full interview, that's the place to go, youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video. All right, folks. Oceania, UK, you're welcome. We got it to you early, and the rest of you should get this podcast a little bit earlier. So that's one way we can get back to you. Until we get back onto full video, at least this audio is going to get to you earlier. We're going to really make an effort to do that. And be on the lookout for video pretty soon. We'll sort that out soon, we promise. Enjoy your day. Keep it locked on MMA Junkie, as always. And we'll talk to you soon. Go out there and be a champion.